take that as my cue. Ladies and gentlemen, it is May 9th, 2016. You are listening to the Raw Reaction here on DeMarco Wrestling Radio. My name is Harry Broadhurst. We got the whole crew together tonight. It's been a while, but all four of us are in the building. Ladies and gentlemen, the Down Since Day One co-host, 401 Mania's Tony Acero.
Hello.
How incredibly understated of you. Facebook's Fantasy Wrestling League, Rick Balin, the third man.
Yes, and the entrepreneur of Cape Crusaders.
Thank you. I was waiting for I was waiting for Tony to go na 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 Batman. Like, I fully anticipated it happening, and it didn't. And I got to say, Tony, I was a little disappointed.
Well, I don't think Tony's ready to relieve his moniker of Batman onto someone else.
Oh, no.
When it comes to this show, Tony's Batman, you're lucky to be Robin. Hell, I'm lucky to be Robin. I'm probably more of the butler, dude.
What's up, guys?
And the man on the ones and twos, the man pressing all the buttons to make us sound tolerable, I guess.
And then the mute button comes into play. Credit the MVP, the most valuable producer, Jimmy frickin' Christopher. And might I just say, it's wonderful to be back and hear everyone's voice. I've missed you, Tony. Rick, I love the Cajun twang. And then there's Harry, who I hear from most often.
We miss you too, brother.
Oh, yeah, man.
She was
wild,
such
dude.
An asshole.
I hope you haven't lost
And I will
weight.
Never change.
One of these days, Tony's going to tell you just to leave me on mute for the entire show. And you know what? I'd probably be okay with that, given a couple of the weeks that I've been through here. All right, so before we get into tonight's episode of Raw, there have been some major developments in the WWE since we last congregated, and I wanted to talk to you guys about them there. But I was telling Jimmy C and Rick about this right before you called in, Tony. What I want to do is I want to kind of go over the recent releases in the WWE, and I want to get your guys' thoughts on all of them. The two biggest shocks to me, obviously everybody who's listened to the show for a while knows my fandom of Damian Sandow knows no bounds, and I'm sure the guy's going to land on his feet. The biggest shock to me out of all the releases was Santino Marella, but that had more to do with the fact that I was shocked he still had a job. Anything in particular about this set of releases surprise you, Tony?
You know, I really thought that Cameron was going places, and her release just shocked the hell out of me. I mean, someone that could pin someone else while they're on their stomach is a innovator of wrestling, and I think she was just way beyond her time. Such a shame. Such a shame to see her go.
God damn it, Tony. Rick, how about you? Any of the releases stand out to you?
I mean, obviously, like you already said, Sandow, we've talked about him before on the show, a wasted opportunity. I mean, he had the crowd firmly behind him. You know, he was over with the crowd, but they never used him. And I'm surprised because, like, they weren't using him, but, you know, he was in that Andre the Giant Battle Royal, and he got a reaction in that match. Just, you know, last month at WrestleMania, a couple months ago, he got a reaction, you know, when he stood there. And I think, I don't know if it was Shaq that threw him out or one of those big guys threw him out, but, I mean, the crowd got behind him. So, obviously, the company knows that the crowd will get behind Sandow anytime they put him out there, but they still, you know, showed him his pink slip, and it's kind of sad and confusing at the same time.
Jimmy Christopher, care to chime in here?
No, that's all right. Thanks anyway.
I mean, most of the other ones kind of range from a variety of meh and who cares to a, well, it's not like they were going to do anything anyway situation there. You had Cameron. Wade Barrett, we kind of saw the writing on the wall for. Santino, I think, was the biggest surprise to me in the fact that I wasn't aware he was still employed. I know he hadn't really wrestled ever since he came down with a neck injury a while back there. Hornswoggle and El Torito was kind of a case of who cares at this point, especially with the repackaging of the Matadors. But, yeah, we were talking, and I have to say Sandow's the biggest surprise, and I honestly feel like there are promotions both here in the U.S. as well as overseas that could do wonderful things with Sandow given his rather large fan base, I think. I honestly would not be surprised to see him eventually back in the WWE, although I question how his age is going to play a factor, because if I'm not mistaken, Sandow is coming up on 40. And by wrestler standards, coming up on 40, you're pretty much approaching dinosaur. But, all right, so that's all I wanted to talk about the recent releases with you guys with, and now we're going to actually get into tonight's episode of Monday Night Raw, and I got to say, very wrestling-heavy episode of Raw tonight, I think.
I think the last few Raws, you know, since Mania has been very heavy on wrestling, and a lot, I had mentioned before, the match quality seems to have gotten better. Now, I'm not, tonight's episode, Maya had a lot of matches, and I'm not saying there was any particularly bad matches, but there wasn't any for me that, like, stood out as much as some of those matches in the last couple of weeks were standing out. But it was a good wrestling episode of Raw again, I have to agree.
Tony, why don't you lead us off here with our first Let's Talk About Raw segment here, and we're going to discuss Big Cass's big break.
Yes, we are. So the show started with a opening talkie segment, as per usual. However, I will side with Rick in saying that the last few Raw since Mania have been slightly different. There's been something different about them, and I haven't been able to pinpoint how I want to say it, so I'm just holding off until it hits me. But alas, you will feel and see something different over the past few weeks. Good or bad is kind of irrelevant when we're talking about different. The point is, you're seeing something different. One of the most obvious differences is the influx of new talent. Again, commentary has continued to go overboard with the idea of repetition, and I believe a drinking game in which you just take a shot every time new era is said will lead to hospitalization and alcoholism. But it also spells out the issue with commentary. Alas, if we remove that or mute the TV for a second, you will notice that there is, in fact, a bit of a newness to the show due to new people coming up. One such name is Big Cass, who, although as a part of a tag team, has been getting some light shown on him as a singles wrestler due to the, you know, injury that his tag team partner faced, you know, about a week ago, a little over a week ago. And since that injury, Cass has been highlighted as a force to be reckoned with. I will say that Jericho came out and did a pretty good promo, even though he was cutting it on a broken potted plant. It felt very heelish, and it just kind of worked. Big Cass came out, and there's always this fear when a new guy comes up against a vet that the new guy is going to be completely neutered to nothingness because he's new. That didn't happen tonight. He got his words in, and he stood tall against Jericho, and he even got to big boot his ass out of the ring or off the apron. So I was thoroughly impressed with the entirety of the opening segment, mainly because a new person came through and did not look like a fool. A very interesting comparison would be going back to 1999, I believe, when Jericho debuted against The Rock, and although it's similar only minutely, the obvious nature of the similarity is there. What you saw tonight was Jericho didn't get a one-up on Cass. Jericho didn't downplay him. He didn't ridicule him overtly on the mic. I was completely surprised at the fact that Big Cass essentially stood tall in the little battle that they had here. I won't say so much about with regards to the main event that was supposed to happen, but if we're speaking solely on the main on the opening segment, I was completely shocked that they allowed Cass to get his shine and also make mention of his tag partner, which makes me feel comfortable because it means that, you know, we're not going to get this team broken up before we even get to see their full potential.
I think there's eventually going to be the opportunity for Enzo Amore as a singles wrestler in the WWE, if only because of his ability to talk people into the building with his promos. At the same time, I agree with you that I like the fact that them constantly mentioning Enzo and keeping him in the forefront of everybody's mind will make sure that they're not going to break up Enzo and Big Cass yet because they see potential in them as a tag team down the road. Why don't we go ahead and tie in the main event segment as well here, because it was supposed to be Chris Jericho versus Big Cass in a singles match, and that didn't happen due to the attack perpetrated by the returning Dean Ambrose after the attack by Mitch the Potted Plant last week on Raw.
Yeah, well,
Rick,
I mean, go ahead, Rick.
I was going to say, why don't we let Rick touch first here on what he thought about the way that we went off the air tonight.
Well, I was excited to see Big Cass main event. Well, I wanted to see a main event, and I was actually waiting to see a match between Cass and Jericho, but we didn't get the match because Ambrose was able to have some back issues. Ambrose showed up during Jericho's entrance and jumped him on the entrance, took his jacket, and kind of strolled down the walkway there with the light-up jacket in the dark. Well, commentary struggled to figure out who possibly could it have been that jumped Chris Jericho and took his jacket now, where anybody watching at home obviously knew right away who it was. But, I wasn't disappointed that Ambrose did that because I think he needed to appear somewhere because it would have looked bad for him to be out of action a week after getting hit by a potted plant when he's supposed to be built as this tougher than nails, always getting up street fighter. But we didn't get to see Big Cass in the main event, but we did see a prolonging added fuel to the Ambrose-Jericho storyline, and it worked out, I think, with Jericho destroying the jacket at the end, kind of like they mentioned, an eye for an eye, because Jericho's Ambrose's potted plant got destroyed, so he was able to destroy personal belongings of Jericho's.
The issue that I have with this is you could have done the thing with Jericho's jacket while the course of Jericho and Big Cass was going on there. You didn't have to sacrifice the match for Big Cass himself there. You could have had that happen. But then again, this was kind of the night of 1,001 distractions, so I can understand why they decided not to go that route there. I don't think I've ever seen this many bullshit finishes on an episode of Raw in a long time, Tony.
Oh, it was a lot. Not getting the match was kind of disappointing, but I was looking at it from a fan's perspective. If I was looking at it from a storyline perspective, I like the imagery of the jacket just moving along. I got to agree with Rick again with regards to the commentary. Like, honestly, just shut the fuck up. who could it possibly be? I don't know. I have no idea, Cole. Who could it be? Please tell me. It's just really, really bad. It's just horrible. If there's one complaint I have tonight, it's going to be that one. Consistently throughout the entire show, they just shut up. Just shut up. I wish I could watch it on mute, but I have to hear certain things. This could have been done anytime throughout the show. They chose to do it this way. I'm not opposed to it. I really do wish Big Cass would have gotten his main event, but chances are we're going to get that match on SmackDown, and chances are I'll be covering it. So we'll eventually get there. And, of course, there's the idea of too much, you know, being rushed and whatnot with one person. But you still got Big Cass standing up for himself. You got him throwing Jericho into the ring. You got him, basically getting the upper hand at the beginning of the show. So he's not damaged at all. And anyone says that he is, don't listen to them. It is interesting to wonder, like, why wouldn't he be mad at Ambrose? He kind of fucked up what he called the biggest match in his career. But maybe something will come of that later. I don't know. The idea is, if I'm looking at this segment from the beginning to the end, there's a possibility of them doing it better, but I also don't think that they did too bad of a job.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's really hurt by the way the main event segment went down. I mean, you do, as you said, sacrifice Cass's opportunity at his first real big main event level match. But at the same time, if you want to keep him in a tag team with Enzo, and the fact that they keep mentioning Enzo tells me that they do, then you really don't want him breaking out onto his own as a singles wrestler, because then you run the risk of having to force the separation of a tag team. And I don't think that helps anybody.
Right. So, yeah, I'm not opposed to what they did, and I think it worked out well. Pretty sure there's someone else that wants to talk about it.
Well, if there's somebody else that wants to talk about Big Cass, why don't we go and bring him on right now?
Hey, what's up?
What's up, John?
Who's this?
Not much. I wanted to talk about Jericho and Ambrose. I mean, Jericho's $15,000 jacket ripped by Dean Ambrose. That's an expensive jacket.
Pretty pricey.
Well, yeah, you got to pay an electric bill to wear that thing. So.
Yeah, you have to pay the electric bill for it. I mean, when I saw that, I was like, Dean, what are you thinking, man?
Well, to steal the line that I used to describe it to Tony when he had issues with his feet, the jacket got.
Okie doke by little Jimmy.
Well, little Deanie, I guess, technically.
All right. Okay, guys. Well, I just wanted to call in and say hello, talk about Ambrose and Jericho. But I did want to mention one thing about the releases. I was very shocked when they released Sandow, Barrett, and Santino, and all the other superstars. So, yeah, it looks like a sad day for the WWE quite often. It looked like it was a sad day at all.
Well, the thing about it is it looks like, if you believe the rumors that are going around, it looks like there might be more releases coming later this week as well, rather or not they come from anybody in terms of superstars or if it comes from internally. Between like creative or any kind of management position will all depend on what we end up getting there. But just I think the problem is that they have such a bloated roster right now that you're going to have to do this, and especially when you start working people back in that are on the injured reserve, guys such as Neville and Luke Harper and Randy Orton and people like that.
Right. But before I get off here, you guys have got to check out the new movie, Civil War and Captain America. Good night, guys.
I saw it.
Yeah.
Tony, hope your back gets better.
Oh, that was my back.
Tony's a DC guy. I'm not really sure how that would work out for him.
Oh, I saw it, and it was amazing. It was
okay, guys. I'll talk to
amazing
you later.
Film from top to bottom.
I had original plans to see it, but it ended up getting canceled, so if I get around to it, I get around to it. If I don't, I don't. Honestly, I'm not a huge movie person. We've established that on this show before. All right, so that takes us into our first secondary topic here, one of our own personal pieces here. And if you guys don't mind, I'd like to go first tonight.
Yeah, go.
Well, usually I'm booked to go first in the format, but we hardly ever pay attention to that. All right, so I'm actually wanting to talk about the debut that we saw on tonight's episode of Monday Night Raw and how I think it's actually a wise decision for both Raw and NXT that this debut happened. And the debut that I'm referring to is there was a backstage interview with Becky Lynch and Renee Young, and Renee questioned Becky about everything that had happened over the course of the last week in regards to losing to Emma last Monday night on Raw, where Emma thumbed her in the eye and then hit her with a Michinoku driver. Not a Blue Thunder Bomb, Cole, a Michinoku driver. But anyway, so while Becky's cutting her promo backstage, she's confronted once again by Emma, And then Emma tells her that she doesn't need to worry about what she's seeing from the front. She needs to worry about what's coming from behind. And Becky Lynch is assaulted by Dana Brooke, making her main roster debut. The two things that I wanted to touch on here is how this is a positive for both WWE, Raw, and NXT as well. And the reason I say that is, honestly, I think the WWE finally realizes they have something with Emma. And given her, Dana, who's played off of so well in NXT, gives both of them the opportunity to stand out as characters in the women's division now that there are no real together teams anymore due to the fact that both Naomi and Tamina are out injured. And Tamina's is apparently pretty serious. So she's going to be out for a significant amount of time, whereas Naomi should be back relatively soon, but it's still the disbanding of Team Bad. It's a good thing for NXT as well, because Dana Brooke was going to flounder in NXT with Emma gone, because Dana hadn't really established a persona of her own ever since she had aligned herself with Emma. Therefore, this takes another person out of the crowded NXT women's division down there already, because there are so many different women in that division as is, that moving Dana doesn't hurt the division, and it doesn't hurt Dana either, because there are people on the main roster that she can work with and improve her in-ring style as well, assuming that she can stay healthy this time. So I want to ask you guys specifically, Tony and Rick here, and if Jimmy C wants to chime in, he can, because I know he's not the fondest of women's wrestling. But Tony, I want to ask you first, what are your thoughts of the official call-up to the main roster for one Dana Brooke?
I would like to, from here on out, refer to Emma as Hot Ass Evil Emma. Until further notice. Thank you.
That's fair.
As for the debut of Dana, I think that it is both welcomed and appreciated, mainly because the more females from NXT that we get on the main roster, the better, in my opinion. Also because it gives Hot Ass Evil Emma another fold. Also because it gives Dana another fold into which we can hold on to and appreciate the characters all the more. And it gives Becky more intensity. You see, they removed Sasha and Becky from the title picture, and everyone's wondering why they didn't have to do that. Well, we have a story here with Becky. We have history. We have an eye injury. We have NXT from, you know, eons ago. We've got stuff here that we could work with to the point where you're not so mad anymore that Becky's not involved, because as in real life, you do have a major goal, but oftentimes there are minor setbacks that you need to first take care of. And that is something that I've been noticing they've been doing with a lot of feuds, where there is a major goal involved, but there are minor setbacks that they need to deal with. I'm talking everyone from Becky Lynch to Kevin Owens to, you know, to Jericho. There's got to be someone in the writing room right now saying, hey, guys, chill out. Let's take a step back and see where we can push these people. And if that's what's happening, I'm in love with it. But anyways, with regards to this specific debut, yeah, again, any person from NXT coming up to the main roster, especially a female. I want to take what Harry said real quick and highlight it, because it's something that 2 to 3 years ago, if we said, we would probably roll our eyes. He said, a bloated divas division. If that was said to us 2 to 3 years ago, it would probably be full of Eva Marie's, okay? 4 to 5 years ago, it would be full of divas top models, you know? 10 years ago, Sables and Tori Wilson. Like, we are in an era where a bloated divas division is something that we can be happy about. It is an amazing feeling, and I'm super excited about it.
Rick, how about yourself here? Where do you stand on the call-up of Dana Brooke?
I think it was a good decision to make. And, you know, they're trying to get serious about the women's division. One, they changed the belt design. They, I think, getting away with calling them divas, and they're actually using women, calling them women wrestlers, and it's a woman's title belt. And if you want to get serious about the division, you need to focus on it as an entire division and not just be able to have one storyline centered around the title. You know, it needs to be kind of like the men's division. Not everyone in that division is wrestling for the World Heavyweight Championship. There's other stories being told simultaneously. And for the longest time, it seemed like there was like, okay, here's the serious women who are going after the title, and here are the eye candy women
for having cat fights. And that's our two women's stories that we're telling simultaneously. And that was going on for a while. And now with Dana Brooke arriving and Emma and Becky and Sasha all background characters while Natty and Charlotte vie for the title, you can actually have two simultaneous stories going on with women that can actually wrestle in the ring. It's not just here's our serious women and here's our total divas that we put on TV to roll around and have the guys look at them. So I'm excited about that.
Jimmy C, do you want to chime in here?
You know, it's just really nice to see a storyline that isn't Total Divas or Women's Championship. Because for the longest time, that's all we had. If it wasn't about Total Divas, it was about the belt. If it wasn't about the belt, it was about Total Divas. This particular storyline is what I like about wrestling, that they just don't do enough. Where sometimes it's just as simple as two people that don't like each other. There's no cattiness here. There's no like, well, she's an evil bitch, so, you know, blah, blah. At least not yet. I'm sure it's coming. I'm sure once they actually have a match, the commentary is going to suck the life out of it. But if we could appreciate everything but the commentary, then there's something there that we can definitely hold on to.
Not to mention, I think this is a feud that has potential in ring as well, because hot-ass Evil Emma, trademark Tony Acero 2016, and Becky Lynch have a lot of chemistry against each other as well, as they've shown in their match last week on Raw, as well as the matches that they've had down in the matches they had down in NXT too. So I believe that there's potential for great things to come forth out of this particular pairing.
Agreed.
All right, with that, we're going to move on, and we're going to get into our next Let's Talk About Raw here. And before we get into our personal thoughts on it here, why don't we go ahead and bring in our second caller who wanted to discuss what we're about to discuss. And that is the six-man elimination tag match in tonight's episode of Raw. So let's go to JD in Pittsburgh. JD, can you hear me?
I can hear you fine, Harry. How's it going, fellas?
I'm good. What's
Yo.
Up? What were your thoughts on the way things went down tonight?
Great six-person tag. I mean, the Roman AJ hype, but the club and the Roman family, how are the Usos and the Samoan family? It continues to be one of the best exciting things they've got going so far. I think, how are you going to see? I mean, I said it a few weeks ago. However, when I made my predictions, I think AJ's coming close to tasting that title, and we saw him coming damn close to winning that a few weeks ago. And then, of course, last Monday night, of course, he won that big matchup, as you know, on Raw, of course, with his brothers, if you will. I think the way it's shaping up right now, I think AJ's going to win this at Extreme Rules coming up in 2 weeks. I really do. And if he doesn't, shame on them, because like I said, he's caught lightning in a bottle the last couple months, however, since he made his WWE debut, and he seems to be one of the hottest tweeners right now. But it seems like, however, once he attacks Roman and takes that belt, however, you're going to see either the reformation of the Bull Club come full circle with Finn Balor joining the stable, or Finn Balor's going to find a way to get himself involved somehow, costing Roman the match and giving AJ the title possibly at Extreme Rules. What do you guys think?
Well, I'm going to make my official predictions as far as Extreme Rules goes next week here on the show, because it'll be our special pay-per-view prediction episode of the Raw Reaction. But one of the things that you did mention that I do want to talk about there is the fact that this has been one of the better booked storylines in the WWE over the course of the last couple months, and I could not agree more. And I don't think that they necessarily get the credit that they deserve for this time of the year, because you know how, Tony, we talked about, and thanks for the call, by the way, JD, we talked about the fact that they tend to try to build up their storylines between January and March, and then things kind of go into a lull. Well, this year, due to the fact that they've done some reshuffling of the deck in regards to the way that they've used Shane McMahon and the lack of appearances by Triple H there, that there's a certain freshness to the show, and even their April and May storylines have been kind of reinvigorated by proxy. Your thoughts, Tony?
Well, the ability to tell a story like they're telling right now is not difficult. And it's something that I've been saying for a very long time. you're amplifying the character that you already have, and you're taking away the necessity to force something down our throats. For the last couple of weeks, Roman Reigns has not been the face of the WWE. He has been too focused on his family, on his match with AJ Styles. He has not been John Cena pandering to the crowd, kissing babies, you know, shit like that. And it has worked wonders. They have taken a step back and said, let's just tell a story. The story is compelling, intriguing, and amazing, and it is one of the most simple stories that you could possibly tell. What is the story here, Harry? One guy wants a fair shot at the title. He has two friends that are kind of not, you know, good guys, but they're his friends. Another guy has the belt, just wants to be the champion, but his family's involved and is constantly getting hurt. What are these two men to do? They gotta fight. They gotta fight for the title, but everything else involved, that's just extra. The Usos have been stale for God knows how long. And right now, they're still stale, but they at least have something to do. Reigns has been booed, like, to all hell, but he's actually getting cheered here. AJ Styles, I mean, honestly, just think about the reality here. A former TNA star is possibly going to be the World Heavyweight Champion soon. All of this is just, I think it's great storytelling. I think it's simple storytelling. I think that the WWE tries to do more often than not is create a complex storyline with flat characters. This is the other way around. This is compelling characters with a relatively easy story to tell. And that's why it works, because we have something or someone to latch onto. Whether you're the people in the crowd who like Reigns, like that crazy chick that was getting wet on the sidelines, or you're the person that likes AJ Styles. If you add in the wrestling chemistry that they have, you got a recipe for awesomeness.
One of the things that you just pointed out that I wanted to touch on, and then I'll let Rick state his piece on this whole situation too, is that you mentioned the fact that the crowd was really split tonight, and given where he was, his fan reactions around the time of WrestleMania, if you would have told me that a month and a half later Roman Reigns would be getting even pops with AJ Styles, I'd have told you you were full of shit. Rick, your thoughts on the six-man tonight as well as the direction of the storyline in general?
Oh, the six-man as a match, the match wasn't really that great, but the post-match antics and the story involved was excellent. Reigns is getting pops now, and it's because they're booking him the way he should have always been booked. You know, if they would have kept him after TLC when he attacked Triple H, you know, he was starting to get that momentum of crowd support, but they lost it whenever they try to get him to get cute on the mic. And he gives away like that cooler than thou swag that he has, but that's the character that the fans don't get behind. They don't think he deserves that yet. But if he just plays the way he's been playing, being portrayed on TV, where he's just a no nonsense ass kicker, I've been saying this all along, that the fans can get behind him as this silent killer, this brooding monster of a man who's just hell-bent on destruction, the crowd will get behind that as a good guy, as someone to cheer, you know. I enjoy the way AJ flies around for him, like he's able to throw AJ around that ring and through the tables and stuff. AJ's a great opponent for him. He bounces off of Roman like a pinball, but he's still... He doesn't look like a chump doing it. He gets his own offense in, being quicker and faster, and the high-flying ability of AJ Styles versus the strong might of Roman Reigns. It comes off as really good, and I'm excited for their match at Extreme Rules as well.
Yeah, you know, I will say this about the Elimination match. That was a crappy elimination match, right? It wasn't that it was not good. It was horrible. Only because of the decisions that they decided to make with regards to pinfalls and whatnot. I mean, okay, roll-up wins and all that. All of a sudden, you're in an elimination match and you no longer know how to wrestle. Come on now. It was just a small complaint because, like I said, the idea was more of the story behind it. But still, whenever you hear elimination tag team match, you get excited. At least I get excited because those were one of my favorite matches to, like, play on WWE, you know, video games before they turned into crap. Because it was fun, it lasted a long time, and you had intriguement and excitement. But then you get to the actual product, and you realize that more often than not, elimination tag team matches means two people are going to lose sporadically with roll-up or, like, transitional moves instead of an actual finisher, and you're going to get the actual important part at the last, you know, 5 minutes of the match.
Like or dislike the disqualification ending?
I didn't like any, man, how many were there tonight? How many awkward roll-ups or DQs or, I don't know, man. It was just, if there was one complaint about Raw tonight, it would be that, definitely. I mean, there's a lot of complaints about Raw, but one of the most glaring things was, you know, tonight we had champions losing, we had distractions, we had roll-ups. I can't recall what. Sami Zayn won clean. That's about it, right?
Kevin Owens pinned Zack Ryder clean too.
Oh,
but even in the Sami match, Miz had to argue with the referee. Zayn was able to hit him with the exploded suplex in the corner and hit the Helluva kick.
Yeah,
it's like every match ended with somebody getting distracted before they got. Before they lost the upper hand.
Yeah, there was something was in the water tonight.
Yeah, and no, something was in the booking committee tonight. Yeah, I don't put any of the blame on the wrestlers at all. I actually enjoy the fact that we got such a wrestling heavy themed show, and I mentioned that at the top of the broadcast here that, I mean, obviously, you guys know that I prefer my stories to be told in the ring, and that's kind of how I've always been. So having a night like tonight where there were a lot of matches, even if they weren't necessarily great blowaway matches like Rick was saying earlier, having a lot of matches on a show makes the show fly by a lot faster than a typical show would where you're having a lot of talking segments here. They kept the talking to a minimum tonight, and they kept the McMahon involvement to a minimum tonight, too, and I know that's what Rick wants to talk about in the Cajun Corner. So, Rick, the stage is yours.
Yeah, ever since Payback, when we found out that Shane and Stephanie were going to be running Raw together, it's kind of been met with a little bit like people have been worrisome about this. You know, we kind of thought that Raws would be taken over by, you know, the McMahons trying to outdo each other, or Shane making a mess and then Stephanie coming and trying to override him and just a big power struggle. But that's not what we got so far. Now, of course, things could always change, and it always could be a slow build to something else. But, you know, the first last week, the first night, we saw Stephanie extend the olive branch and want to work with Shane. And so far, she's been on her best behavior, but there is a little inkling that something might be up. But tonight in particular, the McMahons didn't have a 20-minute promo in the ring. I don't think they came out to the ring at all. I think they kept all of their involvement in short backstage segments. And it comes off like refreshing and really, really well. I like them getting along right now because neither of them are being inherently face or inherently heel. They're just doing the job of what a general manager would do and not focusing the story on them yet. Of course, you could see that it's probably going to go in a direction where someone's going to want more power or something's going to happen. But as of this moment and as of tonight's episode, they were just doing the job. And we have been bombarded with heel authority figures for so long, with people in charge wanting to have a personal agenda. They've been telling that story since Austin McMahon. And, like, my favorite GM of all time, was probably Teddy Long on SmackDown, who had just pretty much did what Shane and Stephanie did tonight, make fair decisions, and, you know, this is how things are going to go. They backed each other up tonight, and at the end of the night, they kind of had a little moment, a couple of times, they kind of had a little moment where it seems like they almost enjoy getting along with each other. So we'll see how it plays out in the future. But as of right now, I think it's refreshing to not have to be focused on what's the heel authority figure going to do to the superhero babyface. And we could just see, tell other stories of, you know, competition, which is wrestling should be, competition about the biggest prize, which is the World Heavyweight Championship, and it shouldn't have anything to do with whoever's running the show or is in charge of the show. You could tell lots of stories with just two guys that want to be the best and not involve an overhead figure.
Tony, you know how you were mentioning at the start of the show how things feel different right now, and you said that it's not necessarily a good or a bad different, they just feel different. I think Rick may be onto something there with the whole lack of evil authority figure looming over the entire broadcast.
Well, yeah, I mean, he essentially took the point that I was going to make with regards to Teddy Long and his it was rare that Teddy Long got involved, and when he did get involved, it was never out of malice. It was because he had a job to do, or he had to have someone go one-on-one with The Undertaker. I mean, of course, there's a couple of laughable moments, but by and large, what SmackDown had going for it is that there was no inherently evil force running the show. Yes, we know Shane and Steph are going to eventually clash. We're pretty sure that someone or something is going to, you know, back Steph up, whether it's jealousy or this has been planned the entire time or whatever. It doesn't matter. It's irrelevant at this point. Because what we're getting is, you know, we're making matches for the sake of making matches, and Shane isn't, like, 100% face or heel. I'm loving the interaction with Kevin Owens. I'm loving this. Like, he's like a fungus. Like, it's just, he's that annoying fucking employee that just won't leave you alone. He wants a particular type of coffee in the coffee room. He wants a new keyboard. He thinks that his computer should be set away from the window, not by it. You know, just it's so cool to see that Shane isn't, like, putting Kevin Owens' life through shambles because he's a heel. It's simply because he annoys us. Like, you're annoying to me, so you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to make sure that you – I'm going to give this guy an opportunity for your title shot. Not because I'm evil. It's not because I hate you. You just, you bug the shit out of me. Stephanie, of course, she might have something up her sleeve, and, you know, we don't know yet. And it's okay to not know, because right now what we're enjoying is wrestlers wrestling because they want to wrestle. Not because, you know, Stephanie put them in a handicap match 5-on-1. Not because Shane wants to bring, you know, some type of positivity. It's simply because that's what they do. That's why they do it. And they're looking for something from someone, a title, revenge, you know. I mean, it's what they've needed for so long, and I'm glad that they're doing it, even though it's probably short-lived.
I think there's an eventual end game here, and I would imagine it'll probably happen as we get closer and closer towards the bigger pay-per-views later in the year, because we're in kind of a lull right now between WrestleMania and SummerSlam, that they don't really start building for SummerSlam until around Money in the Bank. And that's because Money in the Bank tends to be a pay-per-view that they focus on as well. That being said, the lull that we're experiencing right now is an enjoyable one because of the fact that it's providing equal competition and equal quality and level matches, whereas you're not having to put up with that 5-6-7-on-1 bullshit that we were getting on a constant basis back when we were dealing with the whole authority situation. That being said, obviously, it's not going to last. And the issue that I have with that is you question where they're going to go with this once they do go there, and you worry as to how far they're going to deviate away from the kind of establishment that they have at this point here, where everything being on level footing. And you can definitely tell that the fans are responding positively towards the creative direction of the company. I don't know about you, but I noticed that tonight's Raw thread was significantly more positive than it traditionally has been previously.
I've been enjoying Raw more so the past few weeks than I have before.
And we even got a what was looking like a relatively underwhelming pay-per-view card for Payback turn into a pretty good show, and I think Extreme Rules has the potential to be just as good, if not even better. All right, so here's where we're going to go ahead and talk about the stuff that didn't make it anywhere else on the show here. So we're going to go into our quick hits. The first one that I want to talk to you guys about, and I'll ask Rick about this one, is Baron Corbin and Dolph Ziggler. Should they just have Corbin beat Dolph clean and at Extreme Rules and just be done with this here so Corbin can move on to something else? Because honestly, it's getting to the point of overkill between these two already.
I mean, I was kind of hoping that tonight's match could have just been the payoff and they could have moved on to something else. Yeah, I'm not excited about seeing these two at Extreme Rules. I think Corbin should just easily take care of Ziggler and be done with him. Sad to say, but Ziggler's lost his place in the company for now until they decide to put another rocket to his back and push him probably later on in the year, because that's what they like to do with Ziggler. It's push him when they feel like it and then dog him when they don't.
Tony.
Yeah, I have no interest in this. I don't really have any interest in Baron Corbin, to be honest with you. But if he's on the roster, then he might as well do something. This is just, I mean, they got Ziggler because Ziggler is able to sell well. But there's just like this sense of boredom when Corbin's on the screen. Even when I watched him in NXT, it was just like, okay, well, that's him.
All right, that brings me to the next thing to discuss, and that would be the match between – hold on, I'm drawing a blank now because I just had it, and then now I'm drawing a blank because I don't have tonight's card in front of me, the stuff that we are covering. Yes, the – thank you. The R-Truth versus
Fandango
match to set up more towards Gold Dongo versus
the gorgeous truth.
Yeah. That tells you how little I care about this storyline. It's 4 hours after the show, and I've already forgotten pretty much every one of the participants involved. Look, I know our resident producer is a huge Tyler Breeze fan, and I really enjoy Tyler's work as well. It's nice that he's getting TV time and hasn't found himself Damian Sandow. That being said, I don't think this storyline's doing anybody any favors, and you could definitely tell that out of everything on tonight's show, this was the thing that the crowd cared the least about. Tony, do you have anything to add?
I mean, they're having fun, but we're not. Yeah, it's just a somewhat lackluster storyline.
This thing started off with Goldust. Little kind of funny backstage segments to begin with Goldust wanting R-Truth to be his tag partner. And we all kind of thought that those two actually could have been another Booker T Goldust team. It could have been entertaining. And we said back then that they just were killing it with it just went on too long. Too many requests and too many denials to be tag partners. And it's just like, okay, they killed it. It's not even entertaining anymore. And then they got even more absurd with it. With, okay, now they're mad at each other because, or I don't know. I'm just so lost. It's just, it's ridiculous, and it's not entertaining.
The Night of 1001 Distraction finishes continued as Sin Cara defeated Rusev in a match where Kalisto hits Rusev with a kind of an enziguri kick in the ropes before Sin Cara rolled him up for a good 6 count due to the referee being so far out of position. The issue that I have here isn't so much the fact that Sin Cara and Rusev wrestle on this show. It's what Rick talked about on the Raw thread about David and Goliath. And because Rick was the one that mentioned this, I'm going to give him the stage to repeat what he said on the Raw thread because he's spot on here.
Look, Sin Cara should not have won that match. I'm sorry. We always question WWE's booking, but, I mean, this right here, you're going into a David and Goliath scenario where Kalisto is going to face Rusev. Rusev is the challenger for Kalisto's title, and Rusev is a massive man, and Kalisto's a small luchador. It's David and Goliath. Kalisto should be afraid of what Rusev can do to him, and yet here tonight, his equally small partner, victory over Rusev. You can't tell the David and Goliath story when Goliath already loses to another David that's less significant than you. It's to me they missed the boat here. This was stupid. Rusev should have went over strong. Kalisto should be worried about Sunday in 2 weeks at the pay per view, and we should all be watching the pay per view with anticipation of wondering, you know, wow, will Kalisto be the giant killer? Will he pull off another victory like he did with Ryback? Can he overcome the massive Rusev? But now, we're still going to question that, I guess. But, I mean, why would you have Rusev lose any steam to Sin Cara, of all people?
Tony?
Well, because they wanted to prolong the story and they weren't sure how, so they did this. The issue, alongside with Rick's reasoning, is the fact that we saw it more than once on tonight's show. There's a lot of repetition. There's a lot of the same thing. I don't mind Rusev versus Kalisto. I don't mind Rusev getting a shot at the title. I don't even mind Kalisto not being looked at as a David, but that's what they're selling him as. That's what there was a literal promo of him saying he's in the land of big guys. He's in the land of the WWE. So you're setting this story up, not us. And then you go and do that. I wasn't too mad about it. I mean, a distraction finish for a heel and he loses. That's fine, you know. But I can definitely see where Rick's coming from.
My problem, as you said, was the fact that the distraction finishes were so prevalent on tonight's episode of Raw, and we're going to touch on another one of those distraction finishes in our next Let's Talk About Raw here. But before we get to that, there's one last thing for quick hits here, and I want to know if our producer is still with us. Jimmy C., can you hear me?
I'm here.
All right, I want to ask you specifically about what happened in the semi-main event and what ended up being the actual last match on the card, where the Dudleys defeated the New Day. We've pretty much established that the Dudleys have no real reason to be anywhere near the WWE tag team titles right now, and it was due to a distraction thanks to the Vaudevillains that the Dudleys picked up this win here. But given the fact that we had as many distractions as we did tonight, how does this sit with you being that you're the resident tag team division guy on the panel here?
It's a recurring theme for tonight's Raw. A lot of distractions leading to people picking up victories. And it was very tiresome. It was very badly booked. It was obvious to anyone who was watching or sitting in the stands. And you just wish the writers would show a little backbone and go, yeah, this was bad. We fucked all this up. You know, here's hoping that next week on the Go Home show, we pull our heads out our asses and figure out what we're doing with this. As far as the tag team division is concerned, I don't know. I don't think it hurt nor helped anyone because, number one, we all know the Dudleys aren't going to win the tag titles at all anytime soon. And
right.
So I don't think it helps them. And I don't think it hurts the New Day per se because, you know, the idea that there was still, you know, the Vaudevillains and the New Day, the Vaudevillains and the New Day. Granted, the Dudleys picked up the win. It was more the Vaudevillains walking out last and enjoying their supremacy. So although it furthered a storyline, I just think they did it all sorts of wrong. So we'll see what happens.
Real quick, I want to ask you about the fact that the Vaudevillains were the team standing tall. I think they are the only team that really get anything out of this in the fact that they leave Kofi Kingston lying with the Whirling Dervish. Agree or disagree?
I mean, they gain a little bit of momentum per se, but nothing that I would be worried about or nothing that I would think would sway a decision in a fan's mind one way or another, because they didn't have a match. They didn't have a real match to show anything off. They jumped guys from the crowd or whatever after their or during the match. They jumped a guy after a match. It makes them devious heels and devious, but it doesn't make them, you know, something where you go, oh, well, in a match, you know, we'll see what happens, because they haven't done anything significant on the main roster yet, as far as I'm concerned. They should have had a match the night after Raw, or the night after Payback, where they completely dominated somebody, and they didn't. And unless that happens on the go-home show, where it shows that they're ready and physically prepped for the New Day, then it's just kind of throwing the booking to the wind and going, here we go, yay, watch the balloons fly, and we're going to see what happens.
All right. Thanks for chiming in here, Jimmy. We'll get back to you once we get ready for our final reactions. He's been trying to limit his involvement on the show as an active participant during the show, so I'm respecting his wishes. Tony or Rick, do either of you two want to chime in on the status of the tag team division here? And do you take the Vaudevillains as a credible threat to the tag team titles?
Well, I think what tonight was all about was assuring that you as the fan know that the Vaudevillains are heels. Not saying that we didn't know, but, you know, the WWE does this too often, where they kind of just throw someone on the scene and expect you to pick up or fill in the blanks without realizing that they left a hell of a lot of blanks. So although, yeah, we didn't see a potential squash match in which the Vaudevillains, you know, destroyed a team, I do feel that there's still something to be said about what they did do tonight, which is, you know, have a presence. And that presence was, hey, we're not someone to fuck with. We're not just nothing. The New Day is the power of positivity. These guys are assholes. So, and it's hard to out-asshole the Dudley Boys.
Rick?
Unfortunately for the Vaudevillains, the little mistakes, the injury that happened with Enzo at Payback kind of ruined their, I guess, their debut. It wasn't their debut, but it was supposed to be the night where people would see them and see what they could be capable of, because, you know, we did get some news reports from afterwards saying that they were supposed to be the planned winners of that match and were scheduled to be the number one contenders after Payback, regardless of the injury that happened to Enzo. And, you know, that's what some of us, I think all three of us, had predicted that would be the outcome when we made our predictions for Payback. And a lot of that we predicted because, you know, while Enzo and Cass seem like they'll be just fine even without the belts, this team is a gimmick team that's not going to be taken serious unless the booking takes them seriously. And so, you know, it's unfortunate that we didn't get to see them actually win that number one contendership to see that match. But I think tonight, you know, we're getting to know more about the Vaudevillains, and their gimmick team is kind of becoming more realistic, where they're saying that, you know, they're just fans of an older era where men were men, basically, is how they're being portrayed. And, I mean, tonight was just a heel act to build against the feud against the New Day for Extreme Rules, and we'll see how the go home show how they handle the tag division there.
I'm just concerned. Yes, I'm very concerned. I'm concerned about the direction of the Vaudevillains here, because it's been pretty much reported in multiple places that Vince was not a fan of them to begin with here. And as you said, their opportunity for their standout showcase performance was taken away from them due to Enzo's unfortunate injury at Payback 8 days ago. So it worries me that the Vaudevillains are going to kind of slip through the cracks here. And as somebody that's had the opportunity to see a vast majority of their NXT run, they're a very good team, the gimmick works. They portrayed the gimmick really well, and they're definitely setting their gimmicks, which works for them. But at the same time, I don't think that they're going to have the opportunity to connect, and I don't think they're going to come anywhere near the tag team titles for the New Day. I don't buy them. I don't buy them as a legitimate threat to the tag team titles.
Buy them as a threat, though, and here's why: because of that injury that happened to Enzo, which I think it was just a concussion, so he should be able to come back pretty soon. Once him and Cass come back, I would think that they would have a built-in feud with the Devolve Villains, and if the Devolve Villains were the champions at that time, then you got a good little championship feud with some personal beef thrown in there. And the New Day held that title for a while now. It would be in the world for the Vault Villains to be a little transitional champions while they face Enzo and Cass when Enzo's healthy again.
The only issue I have with that, and we can break down the schematics of it after the show because we do have to move on here, would be where do you go next with the New Day? Who becomes their next targets? Because the League of Nations is no more if they're not going to feud with the Vault Villains. They have no reason to go back to an angle with the Dudleys. The only thing that would possibly make sense is as a heel turned Usos or possibly Anderson and Gallows, but then you'd have to add another member to the Anderson Gallows team in order to have them in a 3-on-3 situation with the New Day. All right. So with that being said, we're going to move on into our final Let's Talk About Raw here. And Tony, why don't you go ahead and introduce?
A family of Flair. Yeah. So last week Ric Flair was officially banned from Extreme Rules matchup with Charlotte and Natalya. This week, they tried to kiss Shane's ass enough to get that rescinded, and Shane said not only is that still intact, but he is also not invited to the ring tonight in Charlotte's match with Paige. Natalya was on commentary, and numerous times she was actually able to one-up JBL, which was refreshing. Charlotte and Paige had a really good match, I think. I was very impressed, both with the time it was given and the chemistry that they two have. Especially considering when they first jumped to the – when Charlotte first got to the main roster and they did eventually go one-on-one, it wasn't good. I didn't enjoy it. But tonight was something different. I like the chemistry. I like the interaction. I like the mocking that they did. And just the match as a whole was really good. Of course, Ric Flair, because he's old and senile, came down anyway and tried to interrupt. Shane came down with a bunch of refs, and Ric Flair looked like the funniest old man ever and was sent to the back. It was nothing was here. I mean, some people could say that the minute Flair showed up, there should have been a DQ ending or whatever, but it was whatever. The fact of the matter is you got just one more step into the Charlotte versus Natalya thing. And you are also kind of, I don't want to say buying Natty as a legit number one contender, but you are at the very least buying her gripe against as to why she feels she's been jicked. I didn't like the repetition of Montreal Screwjob. I think that, of course, they kind of just let it go away immediately afterwards. But since we got what we have, the main point here is that, again, it's nice to see an actual story being developed other than, you know, what we've seen in the past, which was just always so one note.
Not to mention, the other thing that I want to give credit where credit is due here is the fact that for as much as we may have knocked her personality-wise, I've always felt Natalya was a competent in-ring performer. And as you were saying, Natalya more or less held her own on commentary tonight. I mean, she had a few issues here and there with repetition, repeating everything, but that's kind of a trademark of commentary these days in that you repeat pretty much everything you say. I mentioned this when I did the Wrestling Unwrapped to the match with the guys. I did like the fact that the referee for the finish for the match at Payback was Charles Robinson because of the Flair history with Little Nate. So I did appreciate that, but I do agree that it's kind of time to put that finish into mothballs and be done with it. Rick, your thoughts?
Woo!
Excellent thoughts.
No, I mean, you pretty much said it all. I don't know if they're going to eventually pull Flair off TV or have stir some friction between Charlotte and Flair. I know that episode where Dr. Phil was a guest host, he kind of started sowing the seeds of doubt in Charlotte, which is kind of a story that they never really followed through on with. But I mean, there's other instances where Charlotte's being told that, you know, she needs to stand on her own two feet, or she needs to stop relying on her dad. And I think tonight was a night where she couldn't blame her dad on her loss to Paige, because he came out there and he caused a huge distraction, which was the theme of the night, distraction finishes, and that's how Paige got the victory. And if she loses the title on Sunday due to other Ric Flair shenanigans or other distractions, I could see a rift between the two and her finally sending her old man out to pasture.
It's going to old yellow Ric Flair. It's going to be sad.
Yeah.
Tony.
Yep. Yes.
I heard Tony's name.
As did
I. I popped the top for you. Time for the two.
I didn't hear that. Kevin Owens is okay. Well, first of all, we have the Cesaro, Kevin Owens, and Miz all fighting for the IC title, all feeling that they have a legitimate shot at it. Kevin Owens, especially because he deserves a rematch after losing the title. And then you have Sami Zayn, who held up the belt and got a pretty good response. They're all in the back talking to Shane and Steph, and Sami says that he deserves a shot at the belt, which he earns after beating the Miz. And then Owens, doing what he does, he goes to the back and complains a bit, where Ryder is essentially talking to Shane. Owens is pretty mean, asks Ryder, like, why do you even exist, which is pretty fucked up. but anyways, it's
hilarious.
Where Ryder gets to face Kevin Owens for his shot in the match. The reason why I bring this up, the reason why I wanted to talk about it, is because when Ryder lost the title, we assumed he was going to go back into obscurity. Now, I'm not saying that he isn't or that he all of a sudden matters, but I do feel that someone somewhere is fighting for the guy because he's still relevant, even if barely. true, he lost tonight. No, he's not going to be in the match, you know, come Extreme Rules, but it was very interesting to see that this opportunity even came up. The reason why it's interesting to me is because on one hand, you have Ryder still, like I said, existing, much to the chagrin of Kevin Owens. But on the other hand, you have this developing, you know, animosity from Shane to Kevin Owens. And it's like, it's something that I of course, as a fan of Kevin Owens, you're supposed to just kind of like be like, what's going on? But as a fan of wrestling and storytelling and intriguing characters and people that have, you know, some shades of gray, I'm loving the fact that Shane McMahon isn't all good all the time. What he's doing to Kevin Owens isn't right, but it's just, like I said earlier, Kevin Owens is just bugging him. He's just like this, like he said, he's like a fungus. He just won't go away. And I'm really glad that this is happening. I'm also really glad that it's happening to Kevin Owens. Just consider where this guy was 4 years ago. I'll tell you where he was. He was in the middle of a PWG ring in Reseda, California, getting powerbombed into a freaking ladder by Adam Cole. He was getting streamers thrown at him, you know. He was getting super kicked by the Young Bucks. All of this stuff was awesome. But now he's interacting with Shane fucking McMahon. It's just really cool to see.
To a lesser extent as well, you can kind of see Shane having an involvement with Miz, too, in regards to their interaction during the course of their promo that I actually really enjoyed. And I don't think we say this on an almost weekly basis on this show. I don't think people give Miz enough credit for how well he is portraying the character he has.
Oh, yeah, he's doing great.
All right, I do believe that's going to do it for tonight's episode of Raw. Oh, wait, no, it's not. Rick still has to touch on the Intercontinental title feat. Sorry, Rick, go ahead.
Oh, well, I'll say this.
That
we have four men who are fighting for this Intercontinental title, who want this Intercontinental title. And it's really bringing this belt the prestige of this belt, it's increasing the value of this secondary title by a lot. And I think, you know, that's one thing they always struggle with is to try to keep the validity of these mid-card titles, where, like, when John Cena was the U.S. title, he raised the relevance of that belt when he was the U.S. champion doing the open challenges, and then it kind of dropped again. Kalisto, his last couple of title defenses were all on pre-show. But the Intercontinental title, we've seen phases where it's just been irrelevant, or it's just been an obsolete, secondary title. And I think, with Kevin Owens holding the belt and his covet for this belt, and he brought prestige back to it, and now Miz is the champion, but you still got three people who really care a lot about trying to win this title off of Miz at Extreme Rules. It's elevating this belt, so that's a good thing, and I appreciate that.
I think just as importantly here, too, is the fact that all four of these men are capable of delivering at least above-average matches, if not better, on any given night. And that's what has me looking forward to this match arguably the most out of anything at Extreme Rules, because I honestly feel like we could be in line for a low-end match of the year contender between these four, given the proper time to tell a story. I mean, I know I might be setting myself up for disappointment by having my expectations so high, but given the four men in this contest, I think there's a good reason to have my expectations set that high for this particular match.
Oh, yeah, it's most definitely going to be the match of the night. I just, aside from the possibility of Styles and Reigns, you know, pulling something out, which they can. I'm not saying that they can't. They have proven that. But I do feel that this is just going to take the cake.
The overbooking, unfortunately, is going to kick in the AJ and Reigns match this month, just like it did last month at, Payback, because if you take out the stoppages between AJ and Reigns at the match for Payback last month, and I know we didn't really get to talk pay-per-view because we didn't do a show last month, Tony, but if you take out the stoppages, I think you'll agree with me that that was actually a really good match.
Yeah, it was. It was a really good match. Which is why I say that they have a really strong possibility of, you know, being a match of the night contender.
All right, so we'll figure out more as far as where we're going for the road to Extreme Rules, especially next Monday night with that being the go-home. And in addition, you will be able to hear our predictions next Monday night. I retained the title at Payback. I didn't have a chance to mention that there. I actually did outright retain it. It was a tie, but tie goes to the champion.
What? It's a three-way tie, or what?
No, me and you.
All right.
Pretty sure that's how it worked. Hold on, I have them right in front of me. Just give me a second here. Actually, no, me and Tony, I'm sorry. We both had five right, you had four.
Huh. Oh, I got the kickoffs wrong. Yeah,
you missed both of the kickoff matches. Tony actually got both of the kickoff matches right. But anyways, all right, so that's going to pretty much wrap us up here. So if our most valuable producer is ready.
Hello.
It's time to kick off the final reaction. Jimmy C., you're up. Favorite match or moment from tonight's episode of Raw?
I'm going to say, I really enjoyed the Kevin Owens and Zack Ryder match.
Okay, your least favorite match or moment?
The introduction of Dana Brooke, just another lackluster wrestler, glorified fucking character that doesn't need to be on the main roster.
How did I see this one coming, Tony?
Oh, yeah.
Your overall show rating for tonight's episode of Raw?
I'll give it a 6.5 out of 10.
And who was your MVP tonight?
A combination of Shane and Stephanie McMahon.
Very well. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
Rick, you're up. Favorite match or moment?
Favorite moment was the aftermath of the 6-man elimination match. All this stuff with Reigns and Styles. I think they're telling a great story centered around the world title belt. And I really like the interaction between these two guys. I think they play off of each other really well.
Speaking of which, Tony had an absolutely brilliant title for this in the reaction format. And due to the fact that we went to JD to start it off because he wanted to talk about it, we didn't get a chance to say it. So, Tony, if you'd like to, go ahead and share that because it was brilliant.
Which one? What?
The title for the Let's Talk About Raw segment with it, Reigns and Styles.
Oh, Reigns versus AJ with a cherry on top.
Yeah.
They fought over a chair.
I thought it was genius, but I'm easy to amuse. Rick, your least favorite match for a moment.
Least favorite? Honestly, the worst thing of the night was the whole stuff with the Goldust R-Truth saga. But they're so irrelevant, though. I'm not even going to name them as my least favorite. My least favorite would probably be Sin Cara pulling off a victory over Rusev. I just thought that was the absolutely worst booking decision to make for that story, and I gave my reasons why earlier on in the show.
Absolutely. Your overall show rating?
I agree with our producer, Jimmy C. I gave it a 6.5. It wasn't a bad show, but like I said, none of the matches really blew me away, so it's right there in the middle.
Who's your MVP?
Well, MVP, I'm going to give to Big Cass. He showed a lot. We didn't get to see him in a main event match like we had anticipated, but I think he's doing a great job. And one thing I like to point out about him is, though, when you see him come out there with Enzo, you don't realize how good of a talker Cass is all alone, because Enzo's the talker of the group. He's the one that has the mic when they come to the ring, and he does all the talking for him mostly. But I like seeing Cass solo. He's proven that he can handle himself on the mic as well. And just the size and his ability in the ring, I could tell he's going to be a big star in the company with his mic skills, his look, and his athletic ability. I see a lot of big things for Cass in the future.
You can definitely understand why Vince McMahon is high on the guy. Unfortunately, that could mean bad things for the future of Enzo and Cass as a team, but good things for Big Cass as a singles wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Rick. Thank you very much, sir.
All right, thank you.
All right, Tony, you're up.
Yep.
Favorite match or moment?
Miz versus Sami Zayn.
Least favorite match or moment?
Just everything involving R-Truth, Fandango, Goldust, and Tyler Breeze. I get why it's there, and I'm happy that they have something to do, but it's just not all that entertaining.
I guess it beats the hell for them out of being future endeavored on Wednesday like so many of their colleagues were. How about your overall show rating?
Yeah, I'm going to go with 7. It's only slightly higher than the other guys, but because I don't know, I didn't have a bad time.
And who's your MVP?
Shane McMahon. He made me laugh out loud.
All right, Rick.
All right, Harry. You ready?
Fire away.
What was your favorite matchup moment of tonight's episode of Raw?
I'm inclined to agree with Tony for Miz and Sami Zayn.
Okay. And what was your least favorite matchup moment?
Moments. And it's kind of a cop-out, but there's a reason here. It's going to be the scattershot booking for so many of the finishes on these contests here, in that you had the guys and the ladies out there putting in really strong efforts in the ring, I thought, and then throwing a lot of their hard work away by having the kind of finishes that you had tacked on to the vast majority of the matches tonight.
All right. What was your overall MVP first. Who's MVP of tonight's episode of Raw?
I'm going to give it to that Omaha crowd. They were hot for the vast majority of the show. They did not lose their fire except for a couple down moments here and there. And most of the parts of the show that they lost their fire for were the parts of the show you'd expect them to lose their fire for.
Even though bulk of them hate smartphone users.
And what was your overall show rating?
I'm actually even a little bit higher than Tony is. I gave the show a 7.5, and the reason I can't go any higher is because of the stupid finishes on most of the matches, but I was thoroughly entertained by almost all of the matches. And the only match that I really wasn't entertained by was only like 3 minutes long, so it's irrelevant in the grand scheme of things. I do believe that's going to do it for us tonight.
Yes.
Am I missing anything?
Make Darren Young great again.
Oh, I did completely forget about that. Let's go ahead and talk about that for a few seconds here. Is there anything greater in professional wrestling than Crazy Bob Backlund? Because if there is, I have yet to see it.
Dude, I was coming up when Bob Backlund had returned to the WWF and claiming that he's never lost the title. He was still the WWF champion, and he wanted Bret Hart so bad. That was you know, when I was a young buck. I was growing up watching that stuff, and I love Crazy Bob Backlund, man. He's one hell of a character. He's one of the best characters, I think, that the WWE ever invented, man. I can't wait to see him.
I'm almost thinking for a guy to be able to portray it that convincingly that this isn't a character for Bob Backlund at this point anymore. Tony, what is your thoughts on the new life motivation coach gimmick for Darren Young?
I mean, it's something. No, Bob Backlund is nuts, and I'm okay with that. But I don't know where this is going or if it's going anywhere. But, you know, we get more of Bob Backlund, then why the fuck not?
Just the sheer level of ridiculousness that could come out of this is fascinating to me, so I'm looking forward to seeing where it goes.
No, I just want to see Bob Backlund in backstage skits with like Dean Ambrose and stuff like that, man. I'm not even worried about Darren Young. I'm just excited for Bob Backlund.
The sad part is you're not entirely wrong there. Although I am kind of looking forward to Titus O'Neil running into Bob Backlund backstage, because I think that would be hysterical. Bob goes to say something really smart to Titus, and Titus just looks at him and goes, oh. And if they don't do that, they're completely missing an opportunity. All right, with that being said now, for our most valuable producer, Jimmy Christopher, the man from the Cajun corner, the third man, Rick Balin, 411 Mania's the Down Since Day One co-host, Tony Acero. I am Harry Broder. This has been the Raw Reaction on DeMarco Wrestling Radio. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you next Monday night with our predictions for Extreme Rules. You've been listening to the Raw Reaction here on DeMarco Wrestling Radio.
Deuces, bitches.
I'm waiting for the music.
Huh?
Hello?
What do you want?
I'm waiting for a go-home theme. Play your Had Enough song. That works too.